Okay, you are tuned to 90.3 WZBC in Newton, and it is now time for Expanding Awareness, on which I most often do conduct live interviews, either regarding some aspect of the paranormal. I might feature a program regarding holistic health, environmental topics, animal rights, and progressive ideas and such. And if everything is working correctly, we should have with us Elena Davidson. She is author of Finding Your Own Happy, The Soul Searcher's Guide to Peace and Happiness in Everyday Life. And she is an author and coach and a healer, helping to transform the way people approach mental health and emotional healing. And she has struggled with her own mental health and emotional well-being issues, including sometimes even at a suicidal level. And she is trying to identify what her problem was and why she just couldn't get it together and just be happy. And she tried many different things, including spiritual teachings, practices, New Age self-help therapy, positive thinking, and other alternative healing modalities. And so we are going to be discussing issues regarding mental health and how to deal with stuff like that. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. All right. So tell us a little bit about your experience, which I'm sure is not unique to people who feel depressed, have been depressed, and maybe even have suicidal thoughts. And just a little bit about what your experience is, and then we can go into how you overcame it.
Mm-hmm. So for many years of my life, I struggled with depression, although it wasn't until I was probably in my 30s that I really was willing to admit that that's the problem that I had. And at some point, I started to wonder, my goodness, I've done so much work on myself. I'm super self-aware. I've tried so many different things, and they just don't seem to work for me. And I did go through a phase, and I see a lot of other people that go through this phase, or maybe never get out of the phase, where they feel like, wow, all the things I've tried are not really working for me. I wonder if there's just something uniquely wrong with me that isn't wrong with anybody else in the world, and if I'm just sort of screwed up in a certain kind of way. And so it was my journey sort of out of that place of feeling like, wow, maybe I'm just broken like nobody else. And then starting to discover some things that really helped me and really helped me have a different experience with mental health, get out of having those suicidal level feeling depressions, that prompted me to write my book, because I saw so many other people that had that same experience of like, wow, nothing's working and I must just be really wrong. And I knew that if they had some of the information that I discovered, it could make a big difference for them.
All right. But doesn't it sometimes take a positive change, a positive experience that isn't quite an internal thing? Let's say,
mm-hmm.
All right, you're really bummed out, you have money problems, and you win the lottery.
Well, that's an interesting example, because statistics show that people who win the lottery often end up in a couple of years worse off financially than they were before they won the lottery.
That I never understood, but I have heard the
However,
it wouldn't be me. It wouldn't be me.
Right, that's what everyone says. However, the point that you bring up is really important, and something that I do talk about in the book, which is the name of the chapter, is Context and Conditions Matter. Sometimes your experience of a lack of mental health or depression can be directly correlated to the environment that you're in, to the context and the conditions that you're in. And one of the best things that you can do is change your environment, change those contexts and conditions to ones that better support your mental health, that are more caring for you, that work better for you. An example I use in the book is how I read a statistic that said the fastest growing population on antidepressants is kindergartners. And that just really shocked me. I've worked with kids all of my life, and to read that was really a shocker. But what it told me was that those kids are not getting their needs met. They're not in an environment that's developmentally appropriate. They're not getting the care that they need. And if you switch the environment and changed some of the context and the conditions, that those symptoms would go away, those symptoms would change. And I think for a lot of us, we live in a culture and in conditions in our lives that really don't support our well-being. And sometimes could your depression be actually an emotionally appropriate response to what's happening around you? And if so, then what can you do to change those contexts and conditions so they better support you? Maybe it's having more caring people around you. Maybe the people in your life are not the kindest to you, and making some changes in that way could really improve the quality of your life and your mental health.
Yeah, and we hear that antidepressants may not even work.
I just heard something really interesting recently that I wasn't aware of, which is called the psychological injury model of mental health, which is basically the premise that most mental health conditions can be traced to some form of psychological injury or psychological harm. And that can be childhood trauma, but it can also be a stressful work environment, things like that. And one of the things that the doctor that I was listening to said is that even conditions like bipolar, like schizophrenia, which we often equate to more of a biological or chemical kind of experience, you're 5 times more likely to be diagnosed with bipolar disorder if you've experienced childhood trauma. And so that is really interesting to me to say, okay, there really is a connection here about our emotional well-being and what we've experienced, and that so much our mental health responses are responses and are attempts in some way to cope with harmful or stressful experiences in our lives.
Okay, so what is step one? Okay, I'm very depressed. I can't get out of bed. What's step one?
Well, in some way, it really depends what the cause sort of behind that depressive state is. And I have actually a YouTube series that I call Wisdom Behind Depression, where I talk about some of the things that might be going on as far as what your depression is telling you. Now, I found even to the level where I felt like I didn't want to live, that there was always some information behind my depression and underneath the depression that if I could really get to the heart of it would change things for me. So I would say step one is to start to be, and this might sound sort of hard and challenging, but at the same time can be very rewarding, is to start to get curious about your depression and start to inquire in to what is really going on here. What is my depression trying to communicate to me? What is it trying to tell me? Is it telling me that I'm in an awful, horrible situation that I need to get out of? Is there some emotion or feeling that I'm avoiding that I'm not willing to have? There is definitely a time when I was really depressed and then realized at the end of the day that actually I was incredibly angry, but I hadn't been willing to acknowledge my anger and allow myself the space to be angry. And once I finally got in touch with the fact that I was actually angry, the level of, like, I don't want to live feelings went away. And it was such a relief to go from being depressed to the point I didn't want to live to feeling like I was just angry.
Yeah, we do hear that the phrase depression is anger turned inward.
And that definitely sometimes is true. I've definitely experienced that. It's like I have sometimes this experience that I call like screwing the lid down on myself. I'm just clamping down on myself with such harsh judgment and such harsh wrongness that It's like there's no space left. So I really sometimes look at that of like, where am I kind of bringing that energy into my space of contracting myself, making myself wrong, and how can I open that back up?
All right. Now, the name of your book is Finding Your Own Happy. Now, doesn't it sometimes feel like a selfish thing to be happy when the world is so mucked up?
Yeah, that is an interesting question. And I guess the question I would pose to listeners and to you is, are you going to be more effective and have a bigger impact on the world and on the suffering of the world if you're involved and engaged in your own suffering, or if you can find a place of happiness, joy, whatever those positive emotions are, even in the midst of all of the world's suffering and all of the pain of the world, and which one is actually going to make you able to function better and more effective in bringing some sort of positive change.
Right.
So if I'm feeling so down and horrible about the state of the world, what's my likely trajectory? The likelihood that I'm going to feel motivated to do something about it or to have hope, any level of hope, is vastly reduced. Where if I can tap into some form of happiness or okayness in my life that's beyond the conditions of this reality, then I can find sort of the strength to go on, the energy to go on, even in the face of very real, very challenging circumstances. And that can be the same of the conditions and context of your own personal life. It's like, and so here's where sort of positive thinking can have a useful effect, is that if you can access some of that sense of hope and some of that sense of contentment or peace or happiness beyond everything that's happening around you, your life can be falling apart. Can you access some sense of, I'm going to be okay, or well-being, if you will, that allows you then to function and to make the changes necessary to increase the conditions that are contributing to your state of being?
And, of course, these days a lot of people are very depressed about the political situation. You know, it's like, okay, you vote for Hillary, millions of people voted more than they did for Trump, and it didn't matter. So there is a sense of not feeling empowered given the political situation and the persons that are in office. It doesn't seem to always matter that millions of people protest this or that thing, and nothing gets done. I don't know if I even have a question here.
Right. Yeah, and that can be very discouraging. And I've actually been thinking about this a little bit recently, about the state of the world and the state of people's mental health, and how at times like these, there are a lot of people that are really unhappy right now for good reason. And that despondency, that sense of hopelessness, all of that kind of stuff, yeah, it is very real. And yet, like, we have to find something to grab onto to move forward, to continue forward. Otherwise, like, what happens? We just spiral down and down and down. And I would say one of those things, and that's also true of your personal mental health, is building relationship, building connection, being connected to people who you feel like you care about or that care about you or that can hold space for your suffering, for this this pain. Because I think a lot of people suffer also because they feel like super isolated, and that it feels like nobody really cares, and I'm alone in this. And the more that you can have companionship in the journey, that's also true of people who are suffering with severe depression, is that there's a huge sense of isolation, a huge sense of loneliness. I'm alone in this. Nobody gets it. Nobody cares, and nobody cares about me. That increases those symptoms and makes it worse. And it can feel really counterproductive to bring yourself out of isolation. One of the things you want to do is isolate, and yet sometimes the thing that can help is talking to someone, is overcoming some of that tendency to isolate and to cordon yourself off from the rest of the world, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Now, you talk in your book a lot about being empathic, feeling other people's energies, and sometimes one's moods may be affected by another person. You might feel angry or even depressed for, in quote, no real reason, but it may be that somebody is having their attention on you, who is depressed or who is angry. Now, I've had experiences. I don't remember exactly what the issue was, but I was like really agitated. I felt like punching the walls. And then the phone rang, and there was somebody on the line who had some kind of issue on with me, and that's what I was picking up. That's what I was feeling. So can you expand our awareness regarding how other people and their moods, their situations can affect us when it's not your own feelings?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's a lot of why certain people feel like, what's my problem? I've tried everything. Mm-hmm. There must be something uniquely wrong with me, right? That feeling of like, I'm just broken and screwed up, because we don't have good language in our culture for the most part to acknowledge that you could have an emotional experience that isn't yours. You could feel energy, feeling, whatever that is, from other people. And that is huge. So one of the first steps is to start to recognize and acknowledge that not everything that goes on inside of your head and not everything you feel emotionally actually is yours or has to do with you. Because when you start to acknowledge that and you start to look at that, the way you're going to deal with mental health concerns that aren't yours is very different than if you deal with it as if it is yours. And I see also that's a lot of why people go to therapy trying to work out their issues. The only problem is, like, if you're like, oh, I have anger issues and I need to go and figure out what's this anger all about, like, you're not going to get very far because it wasn't actually yours. It was just something that you were comprehending about your environment. Now, so one of the things to do is, first of all, acknowledge, is my feeling, is what's actually showing up in my world right now mine? So an example that I have is, this morning I woke up and I was feeling like incredibly lonely, like incredible sort of grief and loneliness. And I went, wait a minute, like, what is this? And is this even mine? And my senses, now I don't have like any confirmation of a particular person that had to do with that, but talking again about our global situation, our world situation, my sense was, wow, there are a lot of people on the planet right now that feel that way. And I am just feeling into that energy and aware of it. And once I acknowledged that, it really shifted and it got lighter for me. It's like, wow, I'm really tapping into the suffering and the pain of so many people on planet Earth right now. And I was just amazed that when I acknowledged that to myself, how much the feeling that I had inside of myself, that initially I thought, oh, what's my problem sort of thing, it lifted. And then I just felt this incredible tenderness and compassion for all of the people on the planet right now that are feeling that way or suffering that way. And so as you start to inquire into, like, the first question really is this even mine? is what's showing up, and especially moods or energy that show up out of the blue and make no sense for you, like you all of a sudden feeling angry and like you want to punch the wall, and then come to find out it's somebody who has a beef with you. So if something is showing up like that, that seems out of the blue, there's a good chance that it's not yours. It's something that you're picking up on. And if you can acknowledge that, that's the first step. And then my process is I start to ask some questions around it, and I look for what creates a shift, what creates a sense of lightness, what creates a sense of ease for me. So when I said, oh, like, is this even mine? No, that feels a little bit lighter. And does this have to do with, like, a whole bunch of people on the earth that are feeling this way? It's like, yeah, okay, now I don't feel it so intensely in my own being. And I've also had experiences where I can, and this doesn't happen all the time, and sometimes people won't admit how they're really feeling, but I've been able to call up someone that I had a sense I was tapping into, particularly my mom, and say, hey, this is what I'm sensing. What's going on for you? And so many times she has confirmed and said, yes, exactly. That's exactly how I was feeling. And once I acknowledged it, then I stopped feeling it and was able to come out of it. So does that sort of answer your question of how to engage with that or how to sort of move further along with that?
Another more extreme example of my being affected. I used to live at the building that housed the Theosophical Society, Bay State Road in Kenmore Square. And one morning, I was like waking up, and I felt like so depressed. And I thought, what is this? Like, what do I have to be depressed about? And I actually saw this demonic face, like, staring at me. And I looked at it, and I was aware of certain psychic techniques of self-defense and whatnot. And one is to ignore the energies that are coming at you. And this thing, like, started to dissolve. And then people gathered in real time, in real life, for a meeting at the building. And these folks didn't like me. They didn't care for the more experiential things, the hippies, if you will. And it may not be that they said, let's send Victor this demon. But in the esoteric realm, we learn that thoughts can be ensouled by entities. And here, too, is an example where I was able to track it down, where that came from. Now, can you talk more about even entities, let's say, influencing people? We hear about aliens, implants, and all kinds of stuff in other realms that may very well be impacting our emotions, feelings.
Absolutely. And in other cultures, especially more shamanic cultures, the acknowledgement of spirits and entities and their relationship to mental health is a lot stronger and a lot greater. And I'm a little bit of a skeptic, so I don't know that I would have really bought into that notion if I hadn't had my own personal experience with, I stayed in an old factory building. I couldn't sleep. I had all these intrusive thoughts. Like, what's going on? Like, and feeling like I wanted to die, literally. It's like, wait a minute. That really isn't my point of view. I don't really honestly want to die. So, like, what is going on here? And so through some process of inquiry and assistance from others, identified that I was aware of entity energy in that space, probably the suffering of people that had worked in that factory. And then I learned some tools about how to work with it and how to clear it that made a really significant difference for me. And once I sort of understood this piece about entities and entity awareness, something clicked for me, and I started to see how these certain levels of depression. So for me, it was this particular level of depression where I felt like completely separated and isolated from the rest of humanity. Like I was, like somehow there was a wall between me and the rest of everybody else on planet Earth, and that I just wanted to die because I felt so isolated. I started to identify that as experience of entities. So someone once told me that sometimes entities, they don't know that they're dead. So people die and they don't know that they're dead.
Yeah.
And they want somebody desperately to pay attention to them.
Yes.
But they can't get anybody's attention because they don't have a body and then they want to die. And when I heard that, it just, that feeling of complete isolation from the rest of humanity, it just clicked for me. Oh, that's exactly what that entity experiences. And the thing that really convinced me that entities have a huge effect on mental health is that when I learned the tools of how to clear them and how to work with them, I literally did not go back to that same feeling of depression again. And I would start to feel sometimes these little darknesses, I would call them, creep in. And then I would go, wait a minute, what is this? Is this an entity? And then I would use the tools to clear it, and I would feel better. Actually, I was in California this winter, and I'd had an intense day, and so I'd really worked on my energy and got myself to a good place, and I was about to go to bed, and all of a sudden, like it was very dark and out of the blue, just like this really intense darkness of I just want to die and like super dark depression. I'm going like, wait a minute, what is this? And like, who is this? And my sense was this entity energy, and I just told it to, like, go, get out of my space, like, leave me alone, like, I'm done with you. And it really shifted for me. So that's sort of like, in publicizing this interview, I was talking a lot about mental health conditions or topics that not a lot of people talk about that can make a real lasting difference. And for me, this is one of them, the topic of entities and how being aware of entities and spirits affects a lot of people and a lot of people's mental health. But in this culture, it's very taboo to talk about. People think you're crazy. And yet, it was one of the things that if I hadn't gotten that, I would still be struggling with some of these really dark depressions and have no idea why or no idea what to do about it. And I've worked with so many other people that also have these experiences of darkness or whatever you want to call it, these mental health experiences that they don't understand or don't make any sense, that when we work with the entity tools and use the entity tools to shift and clear them, we get really powerful results. So for me, the proof is in the pudding, so to speak. And I don't know, like maybe you don't have to take on the idea that there are disincarnated beings floating around, but I know that functioning from this premise and from this idea and using the tools that go along with it makes a really significant difference and really changed something really fundamental in my experience of mental health.
Okay, I want to remind you that you're listening to Expanding Awareness. And my guest for this morning is Elena Davidson, and she's author of a brand new book called Finding Your Own Happy, The Soul Searcher's Guide to Peace and Happiness in Everyday Life. Okay, you mentioned tools.
Mm-hmm.
What is they?
Okay, so, well, I've mentioned a couple already. So one is the tool of asking questions and seeing what gets lighter for you. The main question for being empathic is to ask, is this mine?
Mm-hmm.
Or who does this belong to? And if the energy shifts for you, if you like go from feeling super heavy to just a little bit heavy,
mm-hmm.
good chance it's not yours. And then with the entity stuff, it's a similar, there's many layers of question, and but on the most basic level is just to say, are there entities present? Does that lighten up your experience? If so, like, hey, who are you? And who are you before that? Who are you before that? Who are you before that? Who are you be in the future? Sort of getting them out of their stuck pattern, if you will, of like being identified with one point in time. Or sometimes it's really just enough to say like, hey, I'm aware of you, and you can go now. Another question that has been really helpful, especially for some of my clients, is to say, hey, do you know you don't have a body? Because a lot of people, a lot of entities are really not demonic, so to speak, or really dark forces. They're just lost, confused beings that never really made it out of this dimension. They're just kind of hanging around. And some of them don't even know that they're dead, right? So they say, hey, do you know you don't have a body? You can go now. And sometimes it can be as simple as that, or as simple as just acknowledging their existence. They just want to be acknowledged that they exist and say, hey, I see you. I'm aware of you. You can go. You don't have to stick around here anymore. So those are some very simple tools to start working with, both being empathic and awareness of entities and spirits. Now, sometimes there are more intense levels where you're going to have to do some more in-depth sort of work to clear whatever's energy is in your space. But that can help for quite a bit of what shows up for people.
And a lot of people give, let's say, spirits or hauntings more power over them than need be. We hear fear is obviously a negative emotion, and that let's say somebody does see a ghost, in quotes, that you know, it freaks them out, whatever. But as you say, you might instruct that entity, that ghost, whatever, that they can go on, that they don't have to stick around. And usually, if somebody even swears at them, that's an a malevolent entity, that they disappear, that they go on.
Yeah, here's a description that I really like that was helpful for me. It's like, well, what kind of people are in the world? There are people that are lovely and lovely to be around. There are people that you get a really weird, creeped out feeling from that you would want to stay away at all costs. And what if entities are just like people and they're beings without bodies but similar energy? So, like, there's going to be people that are, like, just a little bit lost and essentially harmless, and there's going to be people that you get weird, creepy feelings from that you're going to want to run away from as fast as you possibly can. And so, like, it doesn't have to be this weird, scary, big, significant, dark thing. It's just awareness of these energies, and sometimes they're going to be fairly benign, and sometimes they're going to be a little bit more intimidating, if you will. But just think of it, if you think of it as people rather than like this some mysterious, dark, unknown thing, it can have a little less power. And also, the person I learned a lot from entities about, she also said that she used to give her power away to entities, right? Think that they were so much more powerful than she was, that they were all-knowing and sort of had this supernatural power. And then she realized how sort of they didn't even know that they were dead, right? So, like, they're really not smart and they're really not that with it. And so that helped her realize, wow, like, they're no more smarter or have no more access to information or tools than I do. And in some way, and sometimes they're a lot more lost and confused. So it sort of demystify and take away or bring back some of your own power to those situations, just because it's unusual or something different that we don't really talk about. Doesn't mean it's super dark and scary and has all this incredible power over us.
All right. I don't know if this is your expertise, but can you talk about mental illness being a biochemical thing?
Sure.
Deficiencies in blood, whether it's a vitamin deficiency, anything around that?
Well, so the idea of chemical imbalance in the brain is actually just a theory, and there's a lot of research that shows, and this interview I was listening to, Dr. Eric Kruger, I believe, and I was listening to his interview on a podcast called Mental Insights, and he was talking about, like, the lack of evidence, really, for the chemical imbalance idea, and that really mental health is much more, has to do much more with psychological injury. Now, that being said,
I might differ with that, but go ahead.
Yes. So that being said, I do believe that there are physiological components of mental health that make a difference. I went and saw a practitioner that prescribed to me some different nutritional supplements and so forth, and that really did help. And so for me, there was an aspect of my experience of depression that was physiological, and that was helped by things like vitamin D and some other nutritional supplements that I took. Also, my point of view is that if you're taking medications and they're working for you, then great, you found something that works, and if that's a choice that works for you, then awesome. But if it's not working, and there are a lot of people that take medications and don't see results and it doesn't work for you, then maybe you want to look at some of the other things that maybe aren't being talked about as much. And we are, in this culture, very quick to prescribe medication rather than really look at what is the underlying issue or cause and what is going on at a deeper level. So I think medication has a place, and I also think that just chalking up mental health to a chemical imbalance in your brain is missing a lot of really important information. And honestly, for many people, that hasn't worked, or it works initially, and then the effects that they're just the dosage of medication has to increase and increase to the point where it's no longer effective. And I'd love to hear your disagreement.
I had some experiences with having, let's call it, some mental issues. Mm-hmm. I stopped eating meat, and I wasn't supplementing, and I couldn't mm-hmm. sleep. And I had these experiences of, let's say, I'm finally drifting off into sleep. I get this image of, like, this big door slamming into my face. And I got to a point where I was starting to hear things. And one thing, I grew up in South Boston, and in South Boston there was a pizza truck, just like a ice cream truck. And there'd be this kid out there a block or two before the pizza truck arrived, and he'd have a little bell that goes ding-dong, ding-dong. And I'm lying in bed hearing ding-dong, ding-dong. I put my fingers in my ear, and I hear ding-dong, ding-dong. I look at my clock, and it's 3 a.m. in the morning. There's nobody there on a pizza truck.
Yeah.
Now, I read a book by Mark Vonnegut. He's Kurt Vonnegut's son, and he goes into talking about his schizophrenic experiences, and that I forget how it went, but he realized that he was deficient in B vitamins. Now, if you take niacin and your body doesn't need it, you have this flushing effect. So I took a lot of niacin, and it's like I would not have this flushing effect. So I was chemically imbalanced in not having B vitamins. And I think it's very hard for people to understand that a psychic thing, like hearing voices, can be something that comes on with a physical thing or a lack of a nutrient. So,
and I totally agree that there is a nutritional and physiological component to mental health and depression, which what you're talking about is a slightly different than sort of the chemical imbalance theory, but for sure, totally agree that that can be an aspect. Also, sleep deprivation.
Yes.
And people start, I remember, I think it was, maybe it was my coworker, I can't remember who told me the story, but they had, you know, four little kids and were completely sleep deprived and started seeing, having hallucinations and having all of that kind of stuff because they were just so incredibly deprived of sleep. And so that can bring on some of those schizophrenic, if you will, or altered states of consciousness kind of thing that we would describe as like mental illness and mental illness disorders. Now, like, I don't have a lot of experience with things like schizophrenia, but my hunch has been, and this interview that I was listening to sort of pointed to that, that oftentimes the people who have experiences of schizophrenia, of sort of these altered states and psychological conditions, often but not always, they have experienced severe trauma in their lives. And I've seen that in the cases that I've encountered working with people who have maybe these altered perceptions of reality, schizophrenia like that. Most often, the people that I've encountered that have those kinds of experiences have also had severe trauma in their lives. And that's not to say that that's true for everyone, but there is a connection. And I think we miss sometimes looking at, and more and more, we, I think as a culture, we're getting more and more tuned into the effect of trauma, especially childhood trauma, on mental health and on your psychological well-being. But I think it really does have a big effect.
Yeah, I haven't read his work, but Terence McKenna talks about true hallucinations, meaning they're not hallucinations, that there's actually a real event. If you hear a voice, it actually is, let's call it an entity, whatever, for lack of a better word, that is actually out there, you know, providing this voice.
And in all of my work, is one of the premises that I come from is curiosity and asking questions and seeing, like, hey, what is this? Like, you know, am I just sleep deprived? Is there some nutritional thing going on, or am I aware of some thing that is out of this reality's normal degree of perception? Now, people have abilities, like being empathic. I mean, for me, it's mostly emotional, and it's, I feel deeply other people's feelings. But some people have the sort of in the sort of ESP realms of perception. Some people have clairaudience, so they hear things that are, actually give them information that is connected back to this reality in some way, and it can be really helpful for them. Or some people smell things, like you smell something burning all of a sudden and then come to realize there's some issue with fire going on somewhere in your life. Or maybe you see things. So the clairvoyant will see things, and if you don't really know how to work with it or you don't know what it's connected to, you might just think you're having hallucinations. However, if you can start to connect those things up, like I've done with my emotional experience, and say, like, oh, I'm feeling this weird way, like maybe it's connected to someone that I know, let me inquire into it. Maybe you see something and you start to inquire into it, and come to find out you're having a vision about something that's coming in the future or something that's going on in somebody else's world. And so there is that line of, am I just nuts, or am I actually perceiving things that this reality doesn't commonly acknowledge as being able to be perceived, if that makes sense?
It does. Now, what about protection? Protecting oneself, okay? We hear about visualizing white light surrounding mm-hmm. us and perhaps a person that you might have issue with. What is your take on that? Do you feel that's real?
So there's a couple things. One is, like, I don't really buy the idea that we're constantly under a threat and under attack and need to protect ourselves, which is sometimes what that idea comes across as. It's like, oh, you need to protect yourself because there's all of these forces out there that are going to get you if you don't. So I don't really buy into that, but I do believe that sometimes we are so cyclically open or so fluid with our awareness of everybody else and everybody else's energy or what's going on with other people, that it is important to have a little bit more of a boundary. One of the things I do with my clients, I get them to pull their energy back to them, because we have this as empath. So part of what creates people being empathic is they learned as little kids to tap into the energetic experience of everybody around them and feel what was going on around them so that they could know when something bad was going to happen. And so they're constantly processing everybody else's energy. And then you get to be an adult and you've just learned that's how you've lived your whole life. And you're having a meltdown or you feel like I can't function or why am I still not all that happy? It's because you're still constantly feeling everything that's going on around you to a degree that's just overwhelming and makes it impossible to function. And so being able to separate yourself out from other people's energy, to remove other people's energy from your space, and then also pull your own energy back to you can be super, super valuable. And also that differentiation of to start to know what is me and what is everybody else can be incredibly helpful. And so, like, for example, me waking up this morning and feeling this sense of loneliness and saying, hey, wait a minute, is that even mine? And then very quickly recognizing that it's not. Like, I now know what it feels like when I'm really just being me and I'm being in my own energy, if you will. And so when other things show up, I'll be like, hey, what's going on here? This doesn't quite feel like me, and what does it take to get back to me? So those are just a few little things that I think are really helpful. And the more you take up space in your own life and occupy your own life and put yourself at the center of your own life, if that makes sense, my experience has been, and with my clients, is that the less likely you are to be bombarded by everybody else's stuff, because you're taking up that space that you make available when you're just sort of open, receptive, and listening to what's going on for everybody else versus, like, focusing on yourself and your own life.
Yeah, one rather profound experience I had was I was on a subway train and sat down, and all of a sudden I felt, like, really sick. And
mm-hmm.
What is going on here? And there was a person standing up who was, like, totally drunk. And it's like, I just, like, absorbed.
Yeah, exactly. And so
absorbed that. You know, certainly I wasn't looking for any kind of a psychic experience, but, you know, there it was.
And if you're that kind of person, but you don't know that about yourself, or you haven't been willing to acknowledge that about yourself, you're going to walk around in the world thinking, like, what is my problem? What is wrong with me? Like, I have all these crazy feelings I don't understand. And obviously for me, it's on the emotional level most often. But, like, I really felt like, why can't I be happy? Because I'm the most self-aware, self-conscious, self-dedicated to my own personal understanding more than anybody else I know, and yet I just feel so weird all of the time, and it's not getting better. And it wasn't until I really understood, oh, hey, it's not me, and I'm aware of things, that it really started to shift. And so that's something I really want to offer to the listening audience. If you're walking around being like, what's my problem? Like, I've done a lot of personal development, I've done a lot of healing, and I still feel so screwed up. Like, what if it's not actually yours? And what if you're just aware of a whole bunch of things going on around you that you just haven't been able to identify or acknowledge? Because that, to me, that's a pivotal point that almost no one that I went to for help was talking about. Like, always the assumption is that if I was experiencing it or feeling it, it was mine. And that, getting that it wasn't, just changed things dynamically for me.
And I think another experience that most people, maybe most people have, is you're influenced by other people, okay? You're around people who think you're an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And you start acting like an idiot. You go home to your family after some estrangement, let's say, and then, you know, because they think of you as a little kid, whatever, you start mm-hmm. to act that way.
Absolutely.
Any insight on that and how to maybe not have that happen?
That's huge. And so in my book, I talk on a chapter about projection, which is kind of what that is, and definitely, and I've certainly experienced it in my family, it can be the most intense in family, because family has all sorts of dynamics and roles about who you are, who you need to be, how you need to play into the family
system. Or
you're
good for nothing. And
yeah, or whatever it is, or you're the responsible one, or you're the goofy one, or you're the this one, or that one. And yeah, it can be very tricky. So the first thing to do is to notice that that's what's happening. And I would go home and I would feel myself morphing and be like, oh, wait a minute, what's happening here? I'm becoming someone that I wasn't. This is not who I am. And it can be hard to resist that pull. Another thing that I found in relationships with projection is that, like, I would go to great lengths to try to convince or prove to the other person that I wasn't the thing that they were projecting onto me as being.
Right.
But the way I describe it in the book is that this other person is wearing distortion goggles. So no matter how I show up or what I do, they are still going to have a distorted view of me. And that, when I realized that, that was such a sense of freedom that actually I'm not going to change their point of view by how I do or don't behave, because their perception of me is already not based on reality and not based on how I'm actually showing up. And so for me, the freedom was to say, you know what, I'm just going to keep being who I am and know that their perception is actually belongs to them and isn't having any direct relationship to who I'm being and how I'm showing up. Now, in family, and you find yourself in that situation, it's like, acknowledge it and see it for what it is. You may or may not be able to change it. And how can you make the choices that create the most ease for you in relating with your family? So maybe it's you can only spend half a day with them and that's it, and then you need to go back and do your own thing. Or maybe you don't relate in certain ways, or you don't come around at certain times, or whatever that is. And just finding your own relationship with it.
Half a day could be too much.
Yeah, half a day. Maybe it's an hour. Maybe it's you only visit them in a neutral setting. Like, maybe you don't go over to their house because that is too triggering and that creates really weird dynamics. But I think the most fundamental part is to be aware of what's happening, because there's so much unspoken dynamics and energetics going on that can be so... I spent years trying to sort out my relationship with my family and feeling so twisted up for so long.
So many people feel obligated around the holiday times or you know...
Here's a little test. Yes. A little test that I found to start to try to sort out what was actually happening in my relationships with my family was to ask myself, if this person were not a family member, And if they were just another person in my life that I happen to know, how would I feel about the relationship? How would I feel about how they're treating me? How would I feel about how I'm showing up? And it's not to say that you'll choose something different, but it can really open your eyes to say, oh, wait a minute. If any other person in my life showed up like this, I would not have it. This would not be okay for me. And so that's like a really great awareness to understand. Now, there might be ways that you still choose or reasons that you still choose to have your family member in your life, even though you wouldn't accept that kind of treatment or behavior from anybody else. But it can clarify for you what's really going on.
Talk to us about your book and your various services that you offer.
Sure. So my book is Finding Your Own Happy, and where I talk about a lot of these topics in the book. And so the book is partly my personal narrative of my own journey of finding my own happy, mixed with many different of the sort of insights and tools that we're talking about on this call to help someone who's maybe going through similar things that I have, sort it out, do some work with it, have some insight about what's really going on. You can get a free copy, online copy, at findingyourownhappybook.com. That's sort of my gift to the world, is to be able to hear my story and read the book and have the tools. Now, a conversation that came up when we were planning this interview is, do self-help books really help? And that's like such an interesting question, right? And I've certainly been a reader of many, many different self-help books. And now I think the tools in my book can definitely be helpful for people. And more than just like the tools themselves being the answer, like, oh, read this book and you're going to be cured. My sense about my book and maybe some other self-help books is that it opens your eyes to things that you hadn't considered before. And it gives you a new perspective and a new understanding. And maybe the book itself is that helpful and changes your life. Or maybe it opens your eyes and opens your perspective to something that you haven't considered before and moves you in a direction of getting the kind of help that's going to make a real difference rather than just being stuck where you are. And so for some people, reading my book is going to be like the information that they needed that turned things around for them and made a big difference. And for some people, it's going to point them in the direction to say, like, I have a client that I've worked with for the last year, and for her, reading that book was like, oh my gosh, you mean I'm not broken and screwed up and there's not something actually horribly wrong with me? And then she chose to come work with me because she recognized, like, okay, she gets it, and now I want to get it, and I want to get it at a deep level, and I want to shift this for myself. And it's been amazing to watch what has happened for her in a year of working together and how her experience and her understanding of herself and her experience of mental health has completely changed in that process.
Okay, we're coming to the end of our time, and how can people get in touch with you for your various services?
Yes, so definitely go check out my book, findingyourownhappybook.com. That will give you all my contact info and put you in touch with me. If you want to just check out my website, where you can also get my book, it's divineessencecoaching.com, and so you'll find out some more information there as well.
Okay, and might you be available to come back next week?
Yeah, I believe. Let me just double-check my calendar, but that should work.
All right, so we can take phone calls. Was a miss to not take phone calls because the information is so pertinent. So
yes, indeed. I'd be happy to answer people's questions. And likewise, if you get my book, you'll have my email. If you have an quick email question you want to send me, you can ask it there as well. But it would be great to have that conversation on the air.
Okay. What is that email?
So just go to findingyourownhappybook.com, and then you'll be connected to me. You get my book, and then you'll have all of my contact info, et cetera.
Okay, thank you so much for expanding our awareness regarding an alternate take on mental illness and being empathic. And we'll talk again next week if you're available.
Yep, sounds great. Look forward to it.
Okay, thank you so much.